Worst possible.
We're about 5 minutes late and do not have a quorum, but we can actually get started. And the idea that we have three things on the agenda today. A presentation from Deed on sequestration. The sad thing is, I'm actually now starting to be able to pronounce that word correctly. And it means that it might happen. Yeah, I've got yours down. We're going to have then House File 882 and 883. So why don't we get started a bit with the Department of Employment and Economic Development, and we'll go through this a little bit. I'm sure people will have, as they come in, will make a stop and never mind. If the commissioner would please come to the table and identify yourself, we will get started.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, good afternoon. I'm Katie Clark Sieben, Commissioner of Deed.
Commissioner, it's good to have you here.
Good to
please
be here.
Proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you for the opportunity to speak today regarding the federal sequestration on Minnesota. It's important to note that these are real cuts that will have real consequences for real people. No state is going to be able to simply manage these federal cuts away. If these federal cuts take place, the effects will be felt by everyday Minnesotans. We are hopeful that Congress will come to the table to work with the President on a long-term solution around federal debt and deficit that breaks states like Minnesota free of this cycle of uncertainty around federal funding. This cycle of uncertainty is exactly why the governor's budget takes such aggressive steps to structurally balance Minnesota's budget. We know the impact of across-the-board spending cuts at the federal level will impact economic growth here in Minnesota. We expect that these cuts will reduce Minnesota's job growth by as many as 5,000 jobs, push the unemployment rate up by 0.2% by the end of 2013, and lower the growth in Minnesota's personal income by 0.2%. Across-the-board spending cuts will also impact government services at all levels of government, federal, state, and local. The timing of these reductions is still uncertain. While the sequester takes effect on March 1st, the Federal Office of Management and Budget has yet to release information on when funds will actually be reduced. Agencies continue to operate with a lot of uncertainty. Sequestration was designed to be so egregious that Congress would never let it happen, and both sides would find an alternative. Across-the-board reductions provide little to no flexibility on implementation. It is a strategy that the state has chosen not to use, even during our most significant budget deficits. So what are we doing? Well, we've been tracking the progress at the federal level for the past 5 or 6 months very closely and assessing the possible impacts to Deed and sharing this information with MMB. MMB is holding a meeting for all commissioners, deputy commissioners, and budget directors across the administration on March 1st to provide a further briefing to all agencies. Currently, we are not planning to fill federal spending gaps with state dollars. As far as how this impacts Deed, you should have a handout, I believe, in front of you. The main programs that would be impacted are our Workforce Development Division, Vocational Rehabilitation Services, and Unemployment Insurance. These estimates are based on a 5.2% across-the-board spending cut to affected federal programs, which is the latest estimate that we've received. Again, the timing of these reductions is still uncertain. And while the sequester takes effect on March 1st, we're not sure when these reductions would actually occur. Our Workforce Development Division, which receives federal appropriations to provide unemployed adults with job search assistance, skill training, and support services, provides pre-employment services to disadvantaged youth, processes employer tax credits for hiring disadvantaged groups, processes foreign labor certifications, and determines eligibility for Social Security disability. The expected cut to these programs is $5.3 million, and there would be 17,000 Minnesotans affected, dislocated workers, youth, disadvantaged adults, and veterans. Our Vocational Rehabilitation Services administers two programs that receive federal appropriations to assist Minnesotans with significant disabilities to secure and retain employment, live independently, and reduce their dependence on government supports. We expect a $2.2 million cut to this program, and 1,400 Minnesotans with disabilities would be impacted. Our Unemployment Insurance Division, which administers the federal Extended Unemployment Compensation Program that provides benefits to individuals who have exhausted the regular program. The expected benefit cut would be 9% to 10% in either the benefit amount or the duration of benefits that individual receives. And we expect that nearly 12,000 unemployed Minnesotans would be impacted. At this point in time, that's really all the information that we do know about the sequester. We are very closely tracking all activity and making proactive plans in our agency. But until we know the timing of when these reductions would occur, we're not taking any additional action.
Commissioner, I've got a couple of questions here. When you say when these cuts would take effect, do you mean, I've been told that they could be backdated to January 1, and likely would. Is that your assumption, or your the numbers, the way you've worked the numbers, or are they going from March 1st onward?
Could I invite Kim Peck from our Vocational Rehabilitation Services to join? Who's worked on some closely on these numbers?
Very. Go right ahead.
So you have the best information. Thank you.
Welcome. Did you hear the question?
Yes. Yes. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Kimberly Peck. I'm the director of Vocational Rehabilitation Services. You know, my understanding in terms of the implementation of the sequester is that it will apply to the federal fiscal year appropriation. So whether it's backdated to January or March really is less the issue. They're going to be looking at the funding for the federal fiscal year, which begins October 1 of 2012 through September 30th of 2013. So that's the challenge we have, is needing to come up with a reduction. We have only 7 months remaining in the federal fiscal year. So the longer we are on hold in terms of what's going to happen, the more extreme or severe measures we'll have to come up with to reach the cost savings required for the reduction.
So thank you for that. So I want to make sure I understand and hopefully help other members understand. So if there's a $5.3 million cut and you were budgeted for $50 million for the fiscal year, you've been spending along on that assumption that it's 50. Now with 7 months left or maybe less, you have to take $5 million out of half, or just a little over of half. So the cut to services could be larger than what that would have been with 10%. So they would have been a 12 or 15 or even 17% cut using those numbers.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
I have a bunch of other questions, but Representative Newton, did you have?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, and I've heard, not the opposite, but I've heard that this is going to be phased in some areas so that the full effect won't be felt until October. And if it's phased in, it may be, you know, that we don't feel the full impact right away. And hopefully by then the Congress and the President will come to an agreement. We can hope. but I've heard both sides, that it's going to be retroactive and also that it's going to be phased in.
Go ahead, Ms. Peck.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I had the opportunity just last week to speak with the acting commissioner of the Rehabilitation Services Administration, which is our federal funder, the division of the Department of Education, and we asked explicitly, what can you tell us about sequestration? If it happens, how will it be implemented? And the response was, we have been given no directions, no guidance. So given that lack of any information, we are developing a number of scenarios about how we might approach this. For vocational rehabilitation services, for instance, I have a number of options. One, implementation of April 1st. Another, implementation of July 1st. We have to be creative in terms of developing some scenarios about how we might respond to this challenge.
Representative Warden.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. And members, Ms. Chair, members, Commissioner, I just called your office yesterday, as you're probably aware of. The members, I was in front of you last week presenting a House File 292, if you remember that, about the Greater Minnesota Job Training Credit Program. And then the next day, I was notified that Wausau Paper is closing their mill in my district. Almost 200 people are losing their jobs in my district soon. And Congressman Nolan and myself and Senator Rood and Representative Radinovich are meeting with Wausau Management and employees this Friday. But Commissioner, this is really important. Workforce development is going to be even more. First of all, House File 292 is going to be very critical to my area.
Knew that pitch was coming.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. But also, so are workforce development dollars. Big time. 200 employees and their families. So, you know, is there anything? I mean, we have all contacted our Congress folk and our U.S. delegation, Senator delegation. We try to let our public know. You know, what do you suggest? I mean, Commissioner, and I know we're pretty minute here in the whole scheme of the big picture, but you know, we need my folks in some of the highest unemployment in the state, as I've told you all, members, need that workforce development more critical than ever before. So can you offer some suggestions of what we can do to help, you know, make sure that this does not happen?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, thank you, Representative. And I would just urge you to reach out to the federal delegation, as it sounds that you're already doing. So thank you for doing that. We do have a district profile for each of you that shows exactly how many dislocated workers you have in your district, exactly how many Minnesotans have used your workforce centers in your district. So please use those numbers, share that with the federal delegation, and try to help get the word out about how important and critical these services are to getting Minnesotans back to work.
Thank you.
Madam Commissioner, I know the Vocational Rehabilitation Services, we put a dollar figure into the budget to maximize our grant from the federal government. Mm-hmm. So does that lower the requirement for that particular dollar figure? Mm-hmm. I'm actually putting out some pretty bad scenarios, so I want everyone to realize what this really does mean. This is not kidding around. I'll let you go ahead and talk about the 1,400 members, because I'm going to eventually get to the unemployment people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the question is, if sequestration happens, does that then lower the requirement that Minnesota has to provide the matching dollar in order to earn the full federal appropriation? Technically, yes, that would lower the requirement. However, in the federal regulations, there is a maintenance of effort requirement such that the expectation is that the state of Minnesota will invest at least the same amount of money today as it invests the same amount of money 2 years from now as it will today. So what would happen if, with sequestration, if the state were reduce its match appropriation, then our federal appropriation would be reduced by the same amount that the state reduced its appropriation 2 years from now. It's the maintenance of effort requirement that really creates the incentive, if you will, for the state to maintain its level of investment. But candidly, that is one of the things that I have looked at in terms of if sequestration happens, you know, what does that mean in terms of our match requirement?
Ever thought of, Commissioner, have you ever thought of trying to put a maintenance of effort on the federal government so that they live up to their promises? I have a couple other questions, but Representative Fabian has one, and if you have.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this is kind of directed to Representative Ward. The paper mill that's closing there, what was the reason for them closing?
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The reason that Cupton Corp has stated is because their product has become non-competitive in the market at this point.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you define non-competitive for me? I mean, is it the product that they make? Is it the fact that it's too expensive?
Representative Ward.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, the demand for the product is not as great as it has anticipated and expected and has been in the past. And so there's some other facilities that are going to produce the meet the need that they might have.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And where are those facilities located, Mr. Representative Ward?
Representative Ward, do you know?
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, I'm not even sure. Wausau's in Wisconsin, I think. So I'm not sure if. I was a fire teacher, Mr. Fabian, as you know. I'm not sure. I think it might be Wisconsin and some other places.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you know, this kind of goes back to what I've been talking about for 2 years. Why would we create a climate in the state of Minnesota that encourages a company like Wausau to shut down a plant here as opposed to some other state?
In their home state?
Well, maybe they have a facility in Michigan, too. I don't know. My point is that businesses make decisions, as you well know, Mr. Chair, based upon what is best for their business. And we need to create an environment here in the state of Minnesota that makes us more competitive. Regulations, taxes, all those things. We've had this discussion for 2 years. You folks have heard me in committee and on the House floor for the past 2 years talking about business climate and the great companies that are located in northwestern Minnesota who've had the good fortune for many, many years to be able to grow and expand. But much of that growth and expansion has come outside of the state of Minnesota. It's gone to Grafton and Fargo and Spirit Lake and Osceola and now even Monterrey, Mexico and Central Europe. Some of it's obviously for market share, but others it's just because of the fact it's easier to do business in other states. Now, I just handed this thing, Mr. Chair, if I may. Deed services in District 1 for 2012. It says on here that unemployment insurance provided 4,017 residents with $18,842.79 in benefits. I'm not sure where that, but anyway. You know, we have companies in Northwest Minnesota that are looking for workers right now. We need to create an environment, again, that encourages these people to seek those jobs out. So, and I realize we're talking about sequestration, but so much of this is all tied together. I appreciate
trying to give you a little latitude.
I appreciate your indulgence, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Ward.
Well, Representative Fabian, you know, the corporate has said, you know, it has not been due to, you know, over taxation or lack of, they came to Brainerd because the facility, the skilled workforce, because of the climate that Minnesota presented to them, that our district presented to them, they've been very pleased. Actually, Representative Fabian, I was very involved with Deed 2 or 3 years ago to do a $27 million expansion in that facility itself, as believing that the growth was going to be there significantly into our future. You know, Representative Fabian, if we have global warming and climate change, and we don't no longer get snow, your Arctic Cat and
right. Commissioner, I have a question for you.
Yes, be happy to answer.
I'm just.
I love it. You know, it used to be me on this on those seats. You know, we've got 5.3 million expected cuts in the workforce development. And that will affect 17,000 dislocated workers, youth, and disadvantaged adults and veterans. In what way is that? We won't have that service the last couple of months. We'll reduce the service on an ongoing basis. And you might want to bring up the unemployment people, because I got a couple questions about that too. So could you kind of flush that out a little bit?
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'd like to welcome Rick Caligiuri, our Director of Unemployment Insurance, and I will give you just a rundown of what's all included in that workforce development reduction. So our dislocated worker program, expected cut of 624,000, 409 Minnesotans would be impacted. Our WIA adult program, expected cut of 475,000, with 124 Minnesotans affected. Our WIA youth program, 547,000, with 300 youth impacted. Wagner-Peiser, 617,000, with 15,824 Minnesotans affected, and over 200 employers affected. Senior Community Service, $110,000, and 12 seniors. And Veteran Services, $142,000, and 168 veterans would be impacted.
Commissioner,
and those are just the major programs.
Could is there any way you could elaborate now or get back to us on the 16,000? Because the 16,000 dislocated workers,
mm-hmm.
because what I'm or the Pizer one or Pizer Act. Because my concern is, are they not getting job training or job placement, and you know mm-hmm. what they're going to be missing out, and when that likely would be affected? Because mm-hmm. as I said in the original question, would that be reduced services starting March 1st, or would that be backloaded at the end, which would be mm-hmm. October, the month of October? And I don't know if you have that with you or not.
Mm-hmm. So, Mr. Chair, members, related to the question on Wagner-Peiser, that program is our labor exchange system for job seekers and employers that includes our state's job bank, MinnesotaWorks.net, and helps connect employers with skilled workers and skilled workers with open positions. So this is recruitment and retention services that would be going away for over 15,000 Minnesotans. As far as when those reductions would take effect, we're still waiting to hear from the federal government. We need more information in order to be able to answer that question.
Thank you, Commissioner. 16,000, maybe a little bit over what a 3M would be. Representative Kiefer, did you have a question? And then I've
yes.
got one for the unemployment people. Right ahead.
It could relate to unemployment, too. I mean, thank you, Mr. Chair. Overall, the solution seems so obvious. We need jobs. We need people working. That will take care of our unemployment problem. It will take care of workforce development problems. It's going to take care of a lot of problems. So let's grow jobs in the state. Can we agree on that? So what are we doing to promote job growth in the state? We're going to hear a minimum wage increase in this committee this week. It'll be my third time hearing it, by the way. We're raising taxes on businesses, service to service. So I would love to hear from you, since you're the commissioner, of economic development. Please tell me how these plans are going to grow jobs in Minnesota. Thank you.
Commissioner, this should be a really, that was a softball. I'm surprised. I thought you'd come up with a tougher question.
Mr. Chair, members, and I just want to ask a clarifying question. Representative, so you're asking how the particular programs impacted by the sequestration would help grow jobs? Are you talking about the entire governor's budget?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm talking about the overall plan. You're the commissioner. You're in charge of economic development in our state. And I want to hear how the overall plan is going to grow jobs in Minnesota.
Okay. And Commissioner, I know you're coming before the committee next week with a lot of your budget. If you could condense it, because we do have one of the lowest unemployment rates in the Upper Midwest. So you're not doing something. You're doing right.
Mr. Chair, members, and I will be back on Thursday talking about three of Deed's bills, so I will try to keep it short for now so we can go into more depth later, but we do currently have the 12th fastest job growth rate in the country compared with all other states and the 11th lowest unemployment rate. So we do have a healthy business climate. The governor's budget invests $30 million in the Minnesota Investment Fund, which is one of the key state's key economic development tools that currently does not have a dollar in the fund and is in much need of some additional funding. The governor's budget also invests in the Minnesota Job Creation Fund, $25 million, $1.5 million in the Minnesota Global Competitiveness Initiative, and also we are proposing a reduction in unemployment insurance tax from 0.5 down to 0.1%. Those are the four proposals of Deeds that are included in the governor's budget.
Did you want to give her another softball?
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Go right ahead.
Thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just, you know, economies usually are not like reactive right away. It's kind of a follow through. So I'm going to have to give a little bit of credit from the last session for some of the great numbers with job growth and unemployment. I'm talking about moving forward now, because we're setting forth a plan. We're proposing a future budget that's going to affect future. Do you really think that these plans, including the minimum wage increase, are going to promote job growth? And, Mr. Chair, maybe it's rhetorical, and we can save it for next week if you prefer. I'm okay with that. I would love to hear that more in detail than maybe when you...
Representative Kiefer, if I might. If you want to address the minimum wage, I would suspect the governor will tell. I know the answer is coming, but the rest of the budget, if you'd save it for when you come in front of the committee for the rest of it. Go right ahead on the minimum wage. I'm sure I can imagine what the governor's commissioner is going to say.
Mr. Chair, members, I just want to thank Representative Kiefer for being very passionate about trying to grow jobs throughout the state, and I look forward to testifying on Thursday.
And my expectation was, well, the governor hasn't taken a position on this particular bill, and we'll see what the legislature comes up with, was my figuring. Mr. Caligiuri, what's going to happen with, could you more clearly define what the unemployment insurance concerns are going to be? 12,000 people being unaffected or affected by these particular cuts, are they going... Apparently, they're coming off benefits sooner. How soon will that start? The size of their benefits, which will keep, you know, I'm a Keynesian, so I get it. But
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rick Caligiuri, and I direct the unemployment insurance program at Deed. Mr. Chair and members, we have been, it's been communicated to us by the Department of Labor that the federal account for federal extended benefits, which is the Extended Unemployment Compensation Program. And in Minnesota, we only have one tier of that program going. In other states with higher unemployment, they have more extended benefits than we do now. It ticks down with your statewide unemployment rate. And we currently have less than 12,000 people that are on extended benefits. And again, just... as a refresher, the standard unemployment program offers up to 26 weeks of unemployment benefits, and that program is not affected by the sequester. And there are approximately 80,000 Minnesotans that are receiving benefits under that standard unemployment insurance program. So this only has to do with the federal extended benefits, the EUC program, and there are less than 12,000 people still drawing benefits from that program. And it has been communicated to us that the cut will take place to those benefits that those individuals are receiving. There's only two ways to cut the benefits. It's cut their duration or cut their benefit amount. Just as an educated guess, I believe it'll probably be a benefit cut in the benefit amount and their weekly benefit amount. But that will be directed by the Department of Labor, and they have yet to do that. As to when that goes into effect, it could go into effect as soon as Friday. It could go into effect mid-month, and it could be as late as April 1st that will go into effect. And again, that will be directed by the Federal Department of Labor.
And if I could just add one point, Rick and his team have done a fantastic job of getting a letter out to all Minnesotans that are currently receiving extended unemployment compensation to let them know that this potentially could occur starting Friday.
Oh, so that means we probably won't get all those phone calls. Thank you. I will give you a, for the new members, once these unemployment cuts come through, your phone will start ringing. Your phone will start ringing. We need to move on to the other bills, but Representative Fabian, did you have a brief comment?
Yeah, just very briefly. I would like something from the commissioner outlining the counties where the...
Outlining the what?
The counties, the number of people in each county in the state of Minnesota that are receiving the extended benefits.
I'm sure they can provide that to you. Were there any, no other questions? I'm sure we will have other questions on sequestration after, you know, after it happens. Mm-hmm. And I would like you to keep the committee and the chairman particularly abreast of that as we try to put the budget together. Mm-hmm. So thank you for coming today.
Thank you.
I have probably more questions about this and more concerns about this now than I started with, but that's typically what happens around here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Members, we have a couple other bills. So Representative Metza has House File 882 and 883. Bring them both with you. And while we're waiting for Representative Metza to get to the witness table with his witnesses, I just want you to know that our next meeting, we will have House File 577, House File 4, and House File 636. Now, 577 is the UI tax reduction, 4 is the trade office, and 636 is the elevator industry regulations.
Maybe I should sit here more often, Mr. Chair. It's a better view of what's going on.
Yeah, just wait. Just wait. Would you care to move your bill, Representative?
Or is this kind of more like the penalty box here?
Penalty box.
Well, I guess I would like to move House File 882 and get started talking about that. And so basically what we've got here, am I doing this the right way? This is also my first time, by the way. And I heard I screwed up by not bringing cookies. So.
Yes, you did.
Yeah.
Beer would be better.
First time I presented in this committee, I brought a 5-pound nut cake. So
now that's pretty good. So no members, at our next committee, I will have cookies for everyone. So I'm on public record committed to you for that. But basically what this bill does, we're looking to, or actually, is there a preference in which I start with?
Why don't you, Representative Messer, why don't you start with, which we're going to lay one over for 882, so why don't you bring that one forth, and then we'll do 883, which we're going to send to GovOps. So your motion would be move to lay over 882 for...
Inclusion.
Inclusion or further work.
So moved. Thank you.
Proceed with your bill.
Okay, so basically what we're working with here is having some trade people do some work or forming an organization to have the our national trade, international trade, have more of a say from Minnesota specifically. And so what this looks into is forming an organization of both elected officials, labor people, business community people, in forming my bad, let me move to the next one. I just started without, okay. So
House File 882.
So I'd like to move House File now, 882. I didn't realize we just don't even have to talk about 883 now, so.
We'll get 883, but.
We'll start with 882, yeah. So basically what we're going to do with 882 is just report what research out there is found and have a report go back, and the I'm all mixed up, Mr. Chair. Why don't I turn this over to Josh quick? We've got piles of paper here.
Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Josh Wise. I direct the Minnesota Fair Trade Coalition. We're a coalition of about 60 organizations representing business, labor, faith, environmental, farm, and human rights organizations who have a vested interest in seeing trade policy be enacted that's more fair towards the people of Minnesota. What this bill does is to basically give let the state exercise the power that it has to influence federal trade negotiations. Federal trade negotiations are part of the executive office of the president. The USTR is a diplomat. And trade negotiations take place behind closed doors. They're essentially classified. Congress is allowed to see the agreements once they're approved and signed by the president, and then they have to vote to ratify them. So treaty making is essentially a different form of the lawmaking process. Whereas instead of going through committees, this stuff is negotiated by diplomats and then ratified, but it still has the same binding effect that any federal law would. The one area where the states do have leeway, and this is because the federal government so far has given it to them, is on procurement, how we spend our tax money. Because it's such an essential function of a state or local government to spend the money that they collect, the federal government gives states the option whether or not to sign on to procurement chapters of these agreements. Now, I should say that this is fairly new in terms of trade policy. The WTO, the World Trade Organization, their first chapter on government procurement started at the beginning of the last decade, and subsequent bilateral and multilateral agreements have included government procurement chapters. So there's really not a whole lot of charted ground on how states actually deal with these trade agreements and their government procurement chapters. I should say that for the rest of the trade agreement, the states are bound to the agreement, and this is not a Tenth Amendment issue where we're trying to decide which federal laws we don't want to obey. We actually do have the option on this one specific area, whereas we don't for the other aspects of the agreement. So basically what we're doing here with this bill is we're setting a process in place through which the state of Minnesota and the Minnesota legislature are able to fully analyze the impact of trade agreements on the state, whether it's the binding chapters or not the binding chapters, but then to also have that information available and the analysis done so that when we actually do get to decide whether or not we want to sign on to the government procurement chapters, that we're fully educated and we have knowledge of the big picture of where Minnesota is sitting in the global economy and how these trade agreements could potentially affect it, be it for the good or for the bad. I will just say, and this was part of my original testimony, that Minnesota has actually been hit fairly hard by current trade policy. Minnesota as a state in non-recession years runs about a $12 billion trade deficit. More imports than we're exporting. Despite record exports last year, our trade deficit remained relatively flat. We didn't put much of a dent in it at all. Last year, we saw 2,525 cases of trade adjustment assistance certified in the state. So that's people who have applied to the federal government and who the federal government has said, yes, your job was lost due to outsourcing. And Representative Ward Wausau papers in the process of applying for trade adjustment assistance. So it's not just competition from other states, it's international competition that's causing our businesses to leave the state of Minnesota. Just with the country of China alone, since they ascended to the WTO, Minnesota, it's estimated, has lost about 72,300 jobs, or almost 3% of the entire workforce. So we're really being hit hard. We're really being hit hard by trade policy. The way that the process works, getting back to the bill, is for states to give consent is that once the agreement is done, I should say, because this is new, there's not a whole lot of consistency or continuity on the way the USTR has interacted with states when it comes to government procurement. But essentially what they do is they write to the governor, say, we would like you to sign on to this government procurement chapter. And then depending on the statutes in that state, the governor will either say, yes, we'll do it, or no, we won't do it. Just to give you a little bit of an idea of what what procurement agreements do, it basically puts constraints on the state as to what we're going to decide we're going to buy with our tax dollars. It could potentially undermine the ability of the state to enact Buy Minnesotan clauses, to enact Buy American provisions, any sort of environmental constraints we want to put, any sort of preference for small businesses, for minority-owned businesses, etc., are potentially constrained by signing on to a procurement agreement. So, as I said, the purpose of this bill is primarily to establish a procedure by which the legislature and hopefully the citizens of Minnesota can become educated and get full analysis of how these international negotiations are going to affect the state before we sign on. The second part of the bill requires the Department of Administration to do an audit of state goods and services being procured from overseas. This again is so that we are able to conduct a full analysis of how offshoring, outsourcing, and trade policy are affecting our economy and affecting our state government's ability to do meaningful economic development. Trade policy is really the third rail of the economic debate. If you're constrained by international laws, global governments essentially, it's very difficult to enact policy that you may believe is in the best interest of the citizens of your state. So that's what we're aiming to rectify with this bill.
Do you have another testifier with you?
Rick's going to go off for the next bill.
Okay. Well, members, I'm wondering if there's any questions on this particular bill. Representative Newton.
Mr. Chair, I'm not in favor of this bill. This bill is in violation of the Supremacy Clause of the U.S. Constitution, which says that the federal government has the right to establish trade policies, and we can't supersede it at any state level. And I think it's just wrong. We're looking at, for example, with the agreement that's being developed now in the Pacific Basin. If Representative Uglem wants to sell paint there, that would give those countries and agencies within those countries the authority to do the same thing that we're doing, to opt out. So you might have Queensland in Australia deciding that they're not going to accept goods from Minnesota if they're not priced lower than the goods that are manufactured there. It's just wrong. It's violation of federal law.
Any response to that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Newton. We actually did realize that there was a correction that needed to be made in the bill, I don't know if are we going to move that amendment?
I don't know that we have the amendment at this time. I don't think you met the 24-hour
rule.
No,
we're, okay. We caught it yesterday, and we've got suggested language, and yeah. We can take that up at a later time.
Yeah, I'll just say it was never the intent to violate the Supremacy Clause. And you're correct, Representative Newton, that the federal government does have the ability to enact trade treaties. What we're changing, we'll be changing it, the language to say is that this relates to federally requested, trade-related requests from the federal government. Areas where the state actually is being requested to give input or to make a decision. There are areas in trade policy where we do have that authority, this doesn't change any of that authority. What it does is sets a process for over which that authority, is given, or through which that authority plays out. So I will say, though, that even if a government procurement agreement were, let's call it extremely protectionist, which is not something that we would advocate for at all, it wouldn't apply to Representative Uglum's ability to sell paint in New Zealand. It would be up to the authority of the government of New Zealand whether they wanted to do that for state contracts, but he would still be able to sell it in, say, a paint store to consumers or to private contractors. It doesn't inhibit the ability of the private sector to do anything at all.
Mr. Chair, I just disagree with the whole concept. It's, it would be very nice to have buy local, buy state, buy U.S. only. On everything that we do in terms of procurement, but for the United States to do that, you're opening the door to problems in every other country that we negotiate with. I know next week we're supposed to be talking about at the next meeting, I guess it is, opening trade offices in several countries. Well, how do you do that when you're trying to be protectionist to your own country, especially if these trade offices are going to China? The World Trade Organization was started by the United States, and for many years we benefited from it. We just have to be a little bit smarter in what we develop and what we sell to maintain a strategic advantage over other countries and over other businesses.
We have five questions, and then we're probably going to move on to the next bill. I have Uglum, Fabian, Heidegger, Kiefer, and Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It wasn't New Zealand, it was Japan. But
Queensland was Australia. Myself.
Australia,
right.
Yeah.
I just picked that.
But actually, I think part of it, I'm not really in favor of this bill either. I can see the points behind it and everything else, but the fact of the matter is, the system is working in Minnesota right now, and we have huge multinational corporations that, if they really kind of knew about this, would probably be here, but the Cargills, the 3Ms, the Ecolabs, and another big paint manufacturer here in the state, Valspar. And this would probably have a grave impact on their business. Not today, not tomorrow, but given some time, it certainly would, by erecting trade barriers and things. I'm a big believer in competition, and I think the United States can compete with anybody. And we've had some rough times. Look at what the auto industry used to be like and what it is like today when they learned how to compete against international competitors. So I think really what we need to do more than anything is to increase our abilities to penetrate these international markets. We all know the emerging markets are the best place for international companies to go. And we've talked in this committee about more trade offices for Minnesota, and I'm a big supporter of that. And I think that's what we need to do. And when we're talking about jobs from a fair trade agreement and everything else, one of the best ways to create jobs is to have our multinational corporations be very successful. And that's not to erect any trade barriers. Also, we do have a number of provisions where we can protect some of our markets here with, for instance, the Viking Stadium and things like that, with what the state has done as far as local procurement and things like that. So I think this is a bill that if you look at the far-reaching consequences of it, really could come back and haunt us. It's not quite as simple as it looks on paper. It's well-intentioned. I really believe it's well-intentioned, but I think in the long run, it would be detrimental to the state economy, and I really couldn't support it either.
I don't think there's a question there, but I think that was a comment that was a fair comment. Representative Babian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wise, thank you for being here. You said that we have a $12 billion trade deficit in Minnesota. Have you got some data that can support that? And give that to us sometime, please. You said also that there was 72,000 jobs lost in Minnesota. Again, I'd be interested to know where those numbers come. If you could substantiate that for me in writing, please, I would appreciate that. Okay. And then, Mr. Chair, you know, and a part of the deficit, I believe, you know, we could solve a big portion of it if we could start mining copper and nickel up in the Iron Range area. So I think we can all agree to that, right? But I do have a question for Deed, if they're still here. I'd like to know from Deed, how would a bill like this coming forward enhance their ability to grow jobs in the state of Minnesota?
Well, before I, unless Leidiger, Kiefer, or Albright have a question directed to Deed, before I bring Deed up, would you mind if we just come back to that?
I do have one other question that I'll come back to.
Sure.
And then I'm curious to know, what other states have this law in place that seems to be in violation of the Constitution?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian. Hopefully, once we get the language corrected, it won't be in violation of the Constitution. That was never the intent of it, to be in violation of the Constitution. There are states like Colorado, New Hampshire, Vermont, Maine, all have laws on the books. One thing I'd like to make very clear is that this doesn't take any proactive action to enact any sort of what we would call protectionist policy. What this does is sets up a process for evaluation. It's entirely possible that through the process of evaluation, we find out ways that we can further open markets, that we can further increase exports, that we can further, you know, engage in global commerce. But until we've actually had that analysis done in what I would hope is an open and transparent way, the state is going to be limited by just sort of a lack of knowledge about what's happening in the international community and through international trade negotiations. Our hope is that this would actually improve the climate for global commerce. Trade absolutely is vital and important to our economy. Trade policy can either, you know, as we say, create a race to the top, or it can create a race to the bottom. Our goal is to figure out how we make trade policy create a race to the top for Minnesota so that we have a robust trading economy. But if we're not considering all of our options here, and if, you know, the state isn't engaging with some of these international negotiations, then we're handicapping ourselves, in my opinion.
We will come back to Dean.
Yep. Just to follow up, just to that point, Mr. Chair.
I'm going to go to Representative Leidiger. I've got three others, and we do have another bill.
I'll resend my question. It's fine. Pretty much covered.
Kiefer.
Mr. Chair, wondered if there's a fiscal note, because there's some requirements of the department to provide a report.
My understanding.
Simple question.
Mr. Steinberg.
Mr. Chairman and members, yes, there has been a fiscal note requested, and I think that hopefully by the time we reconsider,
that
it'll be available. But
the
short notice just.
I'm okay.
If Dee would like to come down and answer Representative Fabian's question. And then they can hear what the chair has to say about this bill. Ms. Beebe, please identify yourself to the tape, and if you would like, ask Representative Fabian to restate his question. But I think it was, what's your idea on this bill?
Mr. Chair, members, Kim Mabine, I'm the legislative director for DEED, and I understand that to be the question, and I think specifically you asked how this might enhance our ability to grow jobs, and DEED doesn't have a position on this bill at this point, as it was just introduced, and we're just at the beginning stages and haven't had a chance to have a conversation with the author or the coalition, so we look forward to doing that, and if you reconsider, we'll have more of an analysis at that point.
And members, thank you.
Thank you.
And members, Minnesota Statutes 116J.976, state approval of government procurement agreements, pretty much covers this bill. Your bill, Representative Rep Metz, sets out the way it's done. We already have in law, somewhat, the ability for the state to say yes or no to some of that. And seeing how people kind of asked me about my opinion or how the chair would feel about this with the trade office, I'll tell you what I feel. When we trade with countries that purposefully manipulate their currency to give them an unfair advantage at unbelievable numbers, and then treat labor laws as though they're not much more than what you would find in a toilet, I don't think this is altogether that bad of a bill. I won't mention the countries that do it, because then I'd get a call from an embassy. But I think if you read the paper or you read the Wall Street Journal or any place else, it's kind of obvious which countries are doing it. And if we're going to create a World Trade Organization that's going to be fair and open, then the currencies should be fair and open. And the labor laws that are in those countries, I'm not even asking them to have ours, because I don't think ours are very good anymore. But just the labor laws that are actually on their own books allow them to be implemented, then we wouldn't need to do this. So I look forward to when we can bring this bill back, when you correct the constitutional language. Representative Metzler wanted to have this bill heard. He did not make the 24-hour rule. I hope it does.
We will next time. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And hopefully you will get a chance to speak with the other members and tell people what your bill actually does. And it just sets out, as I understand it, as I've read it, a method to report to the legislature before the governor signs off on a trade deal with the federal government, which is in federal law at the present time, on a few items. Thank you. After my soliloquy, Representative Albright, did you want to have a few words? You got a question, I'm sure.
Well,
and then we're going to move on.
I appreciate, you know, the encouragement of giving differential treatment to those that would trade fairly with us. But in light of that, and I'm just wondering, understand that this may have been tried in the past, and I wonder if there's anyone from admin that might be able to speak to it and how it worked the last time we went down this road. Is there anyone from admin in the audience?
Someone's getting up. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Kent Allen. I'm the director of the Materials Management Division of the Department of Administration. This approach really hasn't been attempted before. I might have some background that could be of interest in terms of the history of it, but in 1991, Commissioner Carlson was the first governor who was asked to sign on to a trade agreement, and he did that. And that's what got Minnesota listed on the list of participating states for the World Trade Organization General Procurement Agreement. Then subsequently, the U.S. Trade Representative has asked Minnesota to participate in other trade agreements, and to the best of my knowledge, none of our governors beyond Governor Carlson have ever agreed formally to do that. In a couple of instances, I thought the trade representative was a little heavy-handed because they actually just listed Minnesota, having gotten Governor Carlson's agreement in the early 90s. They sort of grandparented us into future ones. And some states, including Minnesota, questioned the reasonableness of that, and my understanding is that the trade office doesn't do that anymore. But there are a good number of agreements with particular countries now that Minnesota is not technically a party to. And as you pointed out, Mr. Chairman, there is a statute that says that now a governor can't do that unilaterally without the concurrence of the legislature. I think there are several potential agreements pending, and we have all these agreements that are out there that Minnesota is not a party to that I suppose we could be asked again, or as a policy decision the state could choose to sign on to. But in terms of whether there's been a methodology like this in the past to make a decision as to whether Minnesota should participate, there hasn't been anything quite like that. There was a study group, I believe, that was proposed as part of the 2008 law, and it's the 2008 law that says the legislature has to concur. And that study group, which included participation from DEED and ADMIN and some other entities, expired in 2012. I don't think they ever made a formal recommendation to the governor or the legislature as to whether to sign on or not, but that group no longer exists. And this bill, as I understand it, would create an alternative process to that one that expired.
Thank you. Members, I think we're going to move on. We will have a little bit further discussion on 882 when the amendment is ready. So that's laid over. Representative Mehta, I think your 883 has to go to GABA. So if you'd make the motion.
I would like to move that HF 883 move to GovOps.
Be passed.
Be passed to Government Ops.
You got it.
Passed if and re-referred to Government Ops.
All right.
I'm getting this down.
Now, it would have been easy if you'd brought cookies. Why don't you explain your bill and then have your witnesses, and we've got 22 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So next, members and Mr. Chair, is HF 883. Okay. I wrote down the wrong numbers earlier before our House file numbers got down. It's been a confusing morning. So basically, I guess this in summation would be similar to the group that we were just talking about and be basically an advisory group that lets us as a legislature know, the governor and others, you know, how trade decisions are impacting us. So I'll kind of leave it at that and turn it over to...
Who is to testify on this one?
You want to go first?
Just quickly.
Identify yourself for the tape and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Josh Wise with the Fair Trade Coalition. This is actually a reauthorization of what... the gentleman from the Department of Administration was referring to in a reconstituted form that we believe will be more effective in making recommendations. I should also just clarify, the last bill dealt with how the legislature interacts with trade policy. This would give more citizen input on trade policy and then make those recommendations in addition to the legislative recommendations. So I'll leave it at that and let Rick go.
Good afternoon. Please identify yourself for the tape and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman Mahoney and members. My name is Richard Ryan. I'm the Assistant Directing Business Representative for District Lodge 77 of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, and also Secretary Treasurer of the Minnesota State Council of Machinists. The IAM represents more than 12,000 active and retired members in manufacturing, paper and pulp, transportation, and service sectors in Minnesota, and more than 700,000 in the U.S. and Canada. Our members in manufacturing have been under severe economic pressure, due in large, we feel, to ill-conceived trade agreements that have created downward pressure on wages, environmental standards, labor rights, and human rights. These agreements have caused untold harm to the middle class in our country in Minnesota. Manufacturing jobs are the kind of jobs where you can raise a family on what you make. Josh referenced earlier about the loss of jobs just to China since the WTO was implemented in 2001. It's estimated by the Economic Policy Institute briefing paper of August 23rd, 2012, that Minnesota has lost approximately 72,300 manufacturing jobs. These jobs either lost or displaced. Unfortunately, the people that lose those good-paying, good-wage manufacturing jobs aren't able to find those kind of jobs anymore. So when they get reemployed, they're usually reemployed at a substantially lower rate of pay, with the corresponding corresponding loss in revenue, tax revenue, and also increased reliance on the social safety net, unemployment, Minnesota Care, all these things that were part of their package in a good manufacturing job are lost. And actually, the first congressional district in Minnesota was is 20th in the U.S. in manufacturing job loss during this time due to trade with China. So, bottom line, these kind of trade agreements have a great effect on these on good-paying, family-supporting jobs that we all want to have in Minnesota. We were hearing earlier about how do we grow jobs. So one of the things that we think is helpful was the Trade Policy Advisory Group that existed earlier. I was appointed to be one of the labor representatives to that group. We did have several meetings, and we did submit a report to the legislature. Unfortunately, the administration at that time was not very receptive to or supported of the mandate from the legislature to give that advice, but we feel that while fomenting trade policy is a federal issue, we believe firmly that states can and should have a role in how these agreements are implemented within our borders. So when we choose to spend the taxpayers' money in Minnesota to the extent that it's permissible under the Constitution and under law, we should be looking at how these trade policies affect those decisions. So we believe the proposed Trade Policy Advisory Group is a way for the administration and the legislature to gain insight and practical knowledge from Minnesotans directly impacted by these policies and to propose ways to help mitigate the negative impact of trade policy on Minnesota's families. Thank you, Chairman Mahoney and members. Be happy to answer any questions to the best of my ability.
Thank you, Mr. Ryan. Are there any questions? Representative Kiefer.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. When I first heard about this bill, I thought, oh, okay, this seems pretty simple, but I'm hearing your testimony now, and the word protectionism is flashing up all over. It sounds like this is just a way to prevent companies from growing overseas. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, and I wonder what this group would do that's different than the Minnesota Trade Office, because I think we're going to talk about the Trade Office in this committee as well. Thank you.
Mr. Ryan, or...
Representative Kiefer, or Chairman Homey, Representative Kiefer, thank you for your question. This group is made up not just of labor and not just of the administration, but members of in the last time it had members from the Chamber of Commerce were members of this group. So representatives of business, representatives of the administration, representatives of deed, and I really think they're trying to take a holistic look at. That we tried to take a holistic look at the whole issue of what's best for Minnesota and what's best for the people of Minnesota. So, while you know, as a member or member of the Machinist Union, clearly international trade is important to us. We do a lot of we create a lot of products that are sold internationally. We want to. Grow jobs here and all over the country. But we can't compete on an unfair playing field. I'll give you one example real quick. There was a photo essay in the New York Times about 3 years ago. It showed people in India casting manhole covers for public utilities in New York out of steel. These gentlemen in this I guess you'd call it a factory, were casting these manhole covers while wearing nothing more than what amounts to a cloth wrap around their waist and sandals. Certainly not the way anyone in the U.S. would ever work casting steel. It's very difficult to compete on a global scale when countries allow people to be put in that kind of danger on a daily basis to do their job. You can look at China, as we all saw several weeks ago, with the tremendous pollution they have there from their burning coal without any restrictions on smokestacks. And you can't breathe. It's equivalent to smoking 3 packs of cigarettes a day. If that's how we want to compete as a state and as a country, I think that's a losing game. So we're in favor of trade. We believe in trade. We believe in fair trade, trade on an equal level, not trade that we can't compete at.
Mr. Chair, follow up.
I'm sorry. I just
wanted to ask just a clarification then, because you did answer the first part of my question. Thank you. So, how does the Office of Trade help or hurt? Is there a conflict of interest between these two agencies that are very much part of this committee?
I don't know if you're not from Dean, but go right ahead sure. And give it a shot.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Kiefer. The Trade Office has a fairly narrow focus of promoting exports in foreign markets. What the Trade Policy Advisory Committee would do is take a comprehensive view of how trade policy... Now, the Trade Office, is, to my understanding, is going to promote exports, whether it's in China, where they're party to the WTO, or it could be any other country, even if they're not party to the WTO. Their sole focus is to promote exports and attract foreign direct investment in Minnesota. So it's a pretty narrowly focused office, whereas we'd be taking a much more comprehensive look at how trade policy as a whole is affecting our state.
Mr. Chair?
A follow-up, and then we're going to go
quick.
To...
I mean, does anyone else see the potential conflict here? If you're going to put barriers up going this way, how can you expect them to have any goodwill to promote exports in another country? How can you expect them to have any goodwill to promote exports in another country?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiefer, I don't think that there are barriers being erected by having an advisory committee study the state of international trade. You know, having an informed populace, I hope, is not a barrier to trade.
Representative Euclid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess it really never hurts to to talk and have an advisory group, particularly when it could result in more jobs for the state of Minnesota. My question to you is, in the makeup of the group, we only have two representatives from business and industry. And, of course, this advisory group is to promote exports, promote business overseas and everything else. Why only two? We have a wide range of people on this thing, but I would think that you would want more business people on this group to advise the legislature and the state on how to proceed. Why only two?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. Is it Uglum? Is that
Uglum?
Uglum.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I hope that we're not making the assumption that it's all of these groups versus the two representatives from business and industry, because environmental and labor interests are often not aligned with each other. Farmers
really.
Farmers have a very specific set of issues. It's a very diverse membership, and I think representing a very diverse group of interests that are fairly dissimilar to each other. That's the reasoning behind it.
Mr. Chair, just to follow up, well, I would suggest that you at least have four representatives from business and industry on this thing, and maybe cut back on the Senate and House members of one each.
Wait, before you go too farther down, would you like to specify whether it was majority or the minority party that gets cut out?
Well, that's a possibility too, I guess, but that would be Republicans, of course. But whichever, but I really feel that you need to have more business interest in this. You really do, and from that perspective, if you had one Democratic senator and one Republican House member or something on here, maybe that would work. You guys can figure it out. But if this is for business, I think business is underrepresented on this on your layout here. Thank you.
And to that point, although I'm glad it would be you recommending that a House member be cut off, but that's another story. And I'm going to make an amendment here. I was looking at the numbers here, and if you count up the number of members on your board, I come up with 12, and you have 11 stated on line 1.10. So I'm going to give a minute for people to do their own counting to make sure that I'm correct.
You are.
So the chair will move that on line 1.10, 11 is delete 11 and insert 12. All those in favor of said amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Okay. I think you have some valid points, and hopefully, the bill authors and the advocates can have a conversation between now and a meeting in government operations. Representative Clark, did you have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank you for bringing this bill. It seems like it's basically what it would do is provide a lot more information to those of us at all levels of government and industry who are trying to make decisions about various trade opportunities. And I think having that information can only make us better. One of the things this committee deals with are layoffs that are caused by various problems that have to do with unemployment that comes from loss of manufacturing. You said 72,000 manufacturing jobs. That's a pretty significant number. And one of the things we do deal with is the dislocated worker program. And so I think this very much is appropriate to have in this committee, and it's very important to have the DEED look at that. And I was just wondering if it seems to me like this would be something that DEED would be very interested in supporting. And so I don't know if Dean wants to talk about that, but having more and more information about what's going to be happening, what's projected to be happening in terms of any kind of trade can only help us do a better job, in my opinion. I just wanted to say that. And I don't think this is a bill just for business. It's a bill for the whole state, whether it's business, labor, all the different parts of our communities that are hurt when we have an impact that's negative or an impact that's positive. So, again, I just want to thank you for bringing this. I think it's an excellent bill, and the more we can be informed, the better.
Thank you, Representative Clark. Did you have a comment, Representative Newton, or a question?
Just a brief comment, Mr. Chair, is that I think the timing of this is wrong. What I mean by that is the assumption is the trade agreement has already been signed. We're looking at the procurement agreement. I think if we're going to do anything and have any impact, we should be trying to influence the trade agreement itself and working with our our congressional delegation. Having this type of an advisory group, you know, set up to advise not only the governor and to have an official position from the legislature and the governor, but to present that to our congressional delegation so that they can have some impact on the trade agreement before it's signed. You know, why should we deal with something after the fact? I think the concept is good, and I think it's great to have state input, but I just think the timing is not correct.
Members, I'm going to ask for a vote here at this particular time. I could make a couple of comments, but if I find out more from this committee on how to deal with workforce issues as they come forward, I think that would be almost well worth the effort of this particular bill. Members, if you'd like to renew your motion, Representative Mesa, to pass this and move it to refer it to government operations.
I'd like to renew my motion to re-refer this bill to government operations, yes, or to pass and re-refer to government operations.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
It's on its way to government ops.
Okay.
As amended. Do we have minutes here?
You do.
Thank you. And Representative Mesa, I'm sure you read the minutes while you were waiting to come up. So would you care to move the minutes also?
I would love to move the minutes.
All those in favor of passing the minutes of February 22nd signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, same sign. Thank you, all members. We are adjourned.